Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Youth Ministry and Mentorship 101. Today, I am graced by the presence of Paul Thanese. She goes by the name as Pure Thanese on Instagram and her social media. So how are you doing today, sister?
I'm doing good. Still trying to get cleared, but I'm doing good.
Yes, we'll keep you in prayer then. Yes.
Thank you.
So if you could just start off by giving a short bio about yourself and what led you to where you are now.
Okay. So my name is Paul Thanese Gentil. I go by Thanese for short. I was born and raised in Miami. Great parents. Although we wasn't raised like, well, rich, but we was wealthy enough, you know. So growing up, I knew how life was. So as I grew up, we went to Haiti. We visited Haiti. We saw the living lifestyle over there. So 2017, I went there. And there was like a nearby orphanage where we were staying at, which is in Cap Haitien. From there, I just found myself volunteering there for like 3 weeks straight. Like I was supposed to be on vacation, but I decided that I will volunteer at this orphanage that my grandma did not want me to go to. But you know, los jeunes ou pas attendez. So from there, when I came back home, I was thinking about the orphanage and what can I do to help build Haiti, to help, you know, get to where they need to get to. So did my research and I realized social work is the way to go. So I'm majoring in social work at Oakwood University, where I'm currently attending. I graduate in 2022 by God's will. I'm 26. Yes, I am 26.
So you are at Oakwood and you have this goal in mind to get that degree, use what you learned to help where your parents are from, where my parents are from, this country that is in great need. So my question for you is, even as you are starting to get that degree, how do you see how you can use that to help Haiti?
So naturally, I love to help individuals. I believe since I was young, I would try to like be like a type of role model for the younger generation. So, you know, you have to like lead by example. Even like for the elderlies at my church or just anywhere I go, like I'm always willing to like lend like a helping hand. And it's like, it's been like a natural thing for me. So I feel like God had me see what I had to like go through to understand like social work is the way you need to go, because that's what we do. We lend helping hands. We give people the proper resources that they need to better their lives, to better their living situation. So yes, it's like an everyday lifestyle for me. So it's not just a major.
So this is going to be a little difficult question, but it's something that's coming to my mind. I mean, missionaries go down there, NGOs go down there, and still the country needs a lot of help. So what do you think you would do differently, or do you think it just they need more boots on the ground? They need more volunteers. So what's your insight into that?
More volunteers? I would say, I feel like that is a tough question, but I feel like if I do my part as a social worker, someone that's majoring in nursing do their part as a Haitian nurse within the community, if someone within like psychology or wherever field they may be in, if they were to just, you know, go to Haiti and lend a helping hand or like extend the help, I feel like maybe not the generations now, you know, the gumons, but like the younger ones that are seeing these people helping out are going to want to do better and want to, like, you know, do what they can to get to where they've seen people come and try to better Haiti. If you understand. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So
you are also a very influential leader in Southeastern Conference. I saw that they gave you some sort of recognition the other day. Could you let us know about that recognition?
Look, so many people DM'd me and was asking me questions like, what's going on? What's going on? I did put a link on YouTube. It's the same, my same name, Pierre_Thanis. I did put the same, I've actually put a story time, more like a testimony. In January, I've always had the desire to run for Miss Oakwood, but as time went by, it's like, it's just a crown, you know, it's just a crown. And I don't want to, like, represent the school and just focus on the attention, focus on the crown, focus on dressing up. That's not what I wanted to focus on. Back then, yes, that's what I wanted to do. But now that I'm at the age where it's like, I'm here to, like, help the next person better themselves. So I had received a phone call, not a phone call, a text message. I received a message from the previous Miss Oakwood, where she told me that she sees me well representing the school because I'm very active. So as active as I am at Oakwood, and I've only been there for 2 years, that's how I'm very much active within my conference. And that's why, like, you know, when our parents say, l'école, l'église, like, I listen, they're not saying that to us just to, like, keep us in this cage or, you know, where they put you at, just try to grow from there. In the conference, I was very much active. At the school, I'm very much active. So when she told me that, I said, okay, I'll think about it. In 7 days, let me tell you, in 7 days, God made a way. To this day, I don't know how he did it, but he made a way. She messaged me on Friday. I was on the road to Florida that following Friday to speak to the conference. So the video that you saw on Instagram, to speak to the conference and to ask them for a helping hand because, you know, it costs money to run for pageants and et cetera. I went down there, you know, humble enough to ask for only $600. So the video that you saw is them actually, like, you know, who's willing to, if I can find six people to give her $100, we will have $600 for her. In about 15 seconds, I want to say, six people had already raised their hand to give me the $600. And in that moment, It's like, I couldn't, it was not like a, yes, I got the money, I'm going to become Miss Oakwood. That's like, next step is to buy the dress, but it wasn't like that. In that moment, I was just like, wow, like, look how God, like, just moved for me in under 15 seconds. And what people don't realize, and that's what made me very emotional, was the fact that I didn't have to say a word. The people, they may know me, but I didn't have to say an introduction. I didn't have to introduce myself. I didn't have to present to them what my platform was going to be about. I didn't have to do none of that. Pastor Prince Lewis went up there. He spoke on my behalf. And in 15 seconds, six people raised their hand to give me $100 each to raise the money that I wanted, that I needed. Later on, the president for the Southeastern Conference came up and said, we need to invest in our youth. We're gonna also give you $1,000. So that's when it was like, people was going, whoa, like crazy. And, like, you know, celebrating and praising and worshiping, because for me, it's just how quickly God moved in my life. I've never seen this happen again. Running for Miss Oakwood this year was not in my plan. It was not in my, that's not what, you know, I planned for, but I went there for $600. I left with $1,600. Yeah. When that happened, the queen that asked me to do it was actually there. Most people don't know that, but she was actually there. And she came to me afterwards And she told me, hey, I've been fasting and praying and asking God to give me a vision on who I should reach out to. And he gave me a vision of you and another individual. That's why I asked. And till this day, like, although I didn't get the crown, although I didn't get the title Miss Oakwood, I know it's a lifestyle for me. Based on how I carry myself as an individual and how I treat others around me. You know what I mean? So although I didn't get the crown, that's fine. It's no problem. But I still want to give the student body what I went for, like what the platform that I had in store for them. That's what I want to continue to do and give them purity, which stands for personally understanding real issues through youth, because many of us go through a lot of stuff that, you know, I may not know or you may not know. So help them get over the issue that they had faced in their childhood so that they can better their life as they move on in college. Wow. Sorry.
No. This is great. And I want to touch on that platform, purity. But before then, for anyone who is not, you know, someone who has gone to Oakwood, could you elaborate on what Miss Oakwood is and what her duties entail?
Duties. Okay. So Miss Oakwood, depending on your platform, they will use it throughout the year to help the students, no matter what the platform is about. For example, 2018, Miss Oakwood, her focus was on mental health. A lot of people don't really focus on that. They don't take it too seriously, but it's a serious thing out here, dealing with mental health. The Miss Oakwood for 2019, her focus was on actually focus on like learning, your learning habits to imply them in your everyday life, like time management, how to use your money wisely, and et cetera. So for me, it was purity. But you present a platform and they will use it throughout the school year for the students. You are also a role model. So when the students see you, they see Oakwood. Based on how you talk to them, based on how you dress, based on how you carry yourself, your character, and et cetera, that's who, like, when they see you, they need to see Oakwood. They need to see Christ in you, because it's a Christian school, an Adventist school to be exact. So that's like what the role of Miss Oakwood do at Oakwood.
So it's not a beauty pageant or anything like that.
No, and yeah, it's deeper than that. People take it for, ooh, I want to dress up. I want to wear a sparkly dress and I want to wear a big crown. And, you know, but that's not what it is. It's more than that. It's way more than that. So.
Okay. And so can you go into a little bit more of purity and what you had envisioned if you had received the crown?
For me, okay, my goal was to help the youth revitalize and their perspective on purity and infusing it into their everyday lifestyle. What I didn't want them to, because when you hear the word purity, you think of like celibacy or like, you know, remaining pure until marriage. But when you hear the acronym of it, which is personally understanding real issues through youth, I wanted them to face the challenges that they faced when they were younger. There's students that still walk around here, you know, traumatized or that is still going through something that might have happened when they were younger, whether it's abuse in any kind of way, whether it was like neglect, whether it was anything that affected them growing up and that's currently affecting them now. So what I had planned, knowing a lot of people in the Southeastern Conference, I was going to bring in actual professionals that either major in psychology that are, you know, well, that actually experienced it for themselves, like people that I know. I don't know if I should name them, but I'm not going to do that. But I was going to bring them in and, you know, give them, you know, some pointers on how to like better themselves, you know, because there's just so much that I can do or bring to the table for them. But to bring in professionals that I actually knew that was willing to do that for me with free of cost, it was like, listen, I was ready. I was so ready to give it my all, which I will currently do. I'm gonna still continue to do what I have to do, you know, because yeah, I'm not Miss Oakwood, so I don't have the plugs to, you know, just bring anybody on campus, especially due to this unforeseen pandemic. So yeah.
Wow. So what I want to ask real quick is, how were you active in Southeastern Conference? Because they were willing to give you that money. So you must have been doing some very big things. So could you let us know what that was?
Yes. Okay. So I was born and raised in the Southeastern Conference. Like, I have pictures since I was young at the campgrounds. I don't know. Like, I'm just so active. I'm so active within the conference. They had a mass choir. I was in it for like 5-6 years. Let me see. Oh, Color Guard. Ooh, that's what it was. Pathfinder. A lot of people, when they turn 16, 17, 18, they want to call it quits. I'm grown. I don't want to be part of Pathfinders anymore. It's for kids. Da, da, da. Listen, listen. That's what got me to where I'm at right now. I was, yeah, in Pathfinders up until I was like 21, 22. 23. I think it was like the year before I left to go to Oakwood, which was, I was 24. So I was in Pathfinders up until I was 23. So up until I was 23, I had my master's, master guide. I was a master guide, very involved. I was in Color Guards for 6-7 years. I was captain for a team. We were practically at every event you could think of. We were at the Haitian camp meeting, we were at convocation, we were at Phasia, we were at federations. Like, we were, you know, you put in the work and people are gonna recognize it whether you may see it or not. And I didn't think people was paying attention. I was just making sure I was doing my part. So as long as you're doing your part, I promise you, you're not going unrecognized. So that was one of the things. For the convocation, for choirs, I was part of the choirs. So if I was doing Color Guard and they didn't need me for Color Guard until after the service, I would change into the choir's uniform and hop into the choir loft, and I would sing. I sung tenor. I'm not an alto or soprano, but I sung tenor. And I was just very involved. Every seminars that they had, every workshops that they had, I was there. To participate, to take notes, because I knew that I would be able to go back to my home church and talk about what they taught us at the seminars or at the workshops. Another thing was, I'm not gonna say I started like a mentor or a mentee program within the conference. It was just a natural thing where, you know, I had young girls coming up to me asking me, how can they have the confidence that I have? How can they carry themselves how I carry themselves? And these are individuals that I don't even know. I've never came across, but they're within the conference. So I see them as family. From there, I just started seeing the conference, not just a conference. I saw them as, this is my brother, this is my sister. Pastor Prince, I see him as like a brother to me. Like, he is awesome. When they went on their first international mission trip, I signed up for it, but I didn't think, you know, it was a lot of us in the conference. So I think I would, you know, go on the trip, and I was picked and I was thrilled. You know, I was, you know, thanking God and thanking everybody. Went on the trip, had a great time. With the missionary trip, like, I had a great time and I would do it again. We went to Jamaica. So, you know, just make sure you do your part within your conference, whether it's Regents Conference, the Northern Conference, the Southern Conference, Southeastern Conference, Central Conference, whatever conference you may be in, just do your part as an individual. And I promise you, it's not gonna go unrecognized, because you have your youth director, you have your Pathfinder director, you have people that are looking at you and like, wow, you know, Tipitita is going to go somewhere because she's very involved. And that's, it goes back to when I said, l'école, l'église, la caille. Don't think of it as a cage. Think of it as a way for how can I better myself when I'm at school? How can I better myself when I'm at church? How can I better myself when I'm at home? You know, so.
Wow. It's interesting that you say that because young Haitian people, when we hear that, we think the cage. We're like,
yeah, oh,
we can't go anywhere.
Yeah, lockdown, yeah.
Yeah, Haitian young people were in lockdown before COVID-19. It was it was school, church,
and home. Mm-hmm.
But you saw it as maximize wherever I'm at.
Yeah.
So I can bring out my best potential and serve others wherever I'm at. That's amazing. Because two things I wanted to highlight. One is that you are a part of the Color Guard in Southeastern Conference. For those who are listening, Southeastern Conference is one of the most dedicated in Color Guard ministry. Mm-hmm. In Pathfinders, something I know very well, that we don't carry the colors correctly. Southeastern Conference is one of the conferences that does it correctly. And I know that because I know the drill instructor there. So she really is making sure. So you are a part of that.
Yes.
So anyone who's listening and thinks that Pathfinder Ministry can't benefit you in your later years, think again. The other thing I want to mention is you called out Pastor Prince Lewis a number of times. That is the youth director for Southeastern Conference. You know who he is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of young people who don't know who their youth director is.
Within the conference?
Yeah, within their own conference. I've visited young people in different conferences, and their youth director is in the same room with them. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I didn't know that was my youth. So I'm just saying that right now so that anyone who's listening can be active in your local church, know who your youth director is, tie in with them, help them, and they can help you, because you never know. You might be in need of something, and they will get up in front of a whole camp meeting or something and say, listen, let's help this young person raise some money, because I'm sure that was a one. I mean, you said you were very emotional because they were willing to serve you and help you.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I got very emotional, because when I went on, the first time I met Pastor Prince was when I actually went on the trip, on a missionary trip, which was in 2017. 2018, I was gone. I moved to Huntsville, Alabama. 2019, 2020, you know, I was in Huntsville. So remind you when I told you that I didn't say a word. I didn't say a word, you know, for them to help or for them to know why they're giving their money to me. He went up there and his introduction of me or about me was like, we actually only really been around one another. Really was when we went on the mission trip. You know, he's very active within the conference, so I don't see Pastor Prince like that, but you know, through Facebook or whatever, it's like, you know. So when he was saying what he was saying, she's very involved and she's very, and she's this and she's that, and she's for the youth, and she, and it was just like, huh? But you, and that's why I'm saying, like, being involved in a conference, you have to understand it doesn't go unrecognized. So I might have known him when he became the youth director within the conference, but he might have seen me being active way before that. You know what I mean? Yeah. He might have seen me doing like color guards. He might have seen me in the mass choirs. He might have seen me at the little seminars that most of the youth do not really like to attend when they go to camp meeting because they want to have fun. I'm not saying you can't have fun, but the seminars and the workshops are very, very beneficial. It's going to benefit your life in every way possible, the information that is given out there. But it amazes me. And I would advise anyone and everyone to get involved into your conference, get to know the people within your conference, know the secretary, know even the treasurer within the conference, because that's who helped me with my three-way scholarship at Oakwood. So you might be attending Andrews University and you're part of the Northern Conference. If you know the people within the Northern Conference, they can help you with a scholarship. There's scholarships within the conference, you know? So that's Southeastern been helping me with scholarships since I've been at Oakwood. So hopefully I get cleared. You know, with their assistance.
And I think when you say Northern Conference, you're referencing Northeastern Conference.
Northeastern Conference, yes. There. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Northeastern Conference, yeah.
So what I would, I mean, you're praying to be cleared.
Yes.
So I would love to hear some words about Oakwood. Right now I'm in Berrien Springs, so I know pretty much the climate here at Andrews, and I used to attend Atlantic Union College, now closed in Massachusetts. But how is it at the HBCU for the Seventh-day Adventist Church? Well, people are always saying how wonderful and exciting it is. How is it?
Okay. So me, I'm a very honest person. So I'm going to keep it 100, okay? So when I first applied for Oakwood, for me, I thought I was going to enter into a campus where everybody is kumbaya, we love the Lord, we love church, we love to pray, we love to gather with one another and have biblical discussion. No, that's not what I walked into. It's as if I walked into a church full of youth that are broken, youth that are seeking for help. It's as if I walked into a place where I want to help you and you and you and you and everybody here. But I love it. I love being at Oakwood. I love how the professors within the conference, not conference, within the school, within the campus, they literally care for you spiritually, academically, and mentally. They care for you as an individual. The classes are only yay big. I think about 25 students max in the classroom, or 30. They care for you individually as a student, as a Christian, as a person, as a student. Yeah, so that's one thing I really, really love about Oakwood. I also love how, although Oakwood Church and Oakwood University is two different, it's like two different buildings. It's two different, they're not connected, but if we need a helping hand, if we need a prayer, if we need whatever we need, we reach out to the church and they come together with the university and everybody is like on one accord. Another thing that I really love about Oakwood is how there's really no judgment. You know, there's no judgment. If you walk around with your natural hair, people may look at it as, oh, you need to get your hair done. But at an HBCU, they embrace the natural hairstyles. They embrace all of that. And that's what I really love about it. I really love about it. I also love how it's just everything. The president within the university, the student dorms, how they really care for the students. They have like a hair salon for both the male and females. I love how they care for us, you know, although we may protest here and there, they hear our voice, they hear what our needs are, and they take it into consideration. So yeah, I love it. I love everything about it. But definitely when I walked into Oakwood, I saw a church. I saw a church that needed help, that is seeking for God a day at a time. You know, you don't just wake up and, wow. Hallelujah, I'm saved.
So what I got for your answer is it's not utopia, it's not perfection, it's not heaven on earth.
No.
But it is a community.
Yes.
And as long as everyone is compassionate and they're caring for one another, that's what makes it really awesome. And another thing that you kind of put little lightly in there, but it's also understanding the culture, because
yes, it does. HBCU, yes.
So, you know, we're not knocking people with natural hair. We understand, you know, our culture. We understand our people. People aren't saying the worship services are boring because it's the one we're looking for. The praise and worship is, you know, the things that we're looking. So I think that's what makes Oakwood amazing and fun.
Yeah.
And it's great to see young people like yourself enjoying it, embracing it, having fun, having roommates, and dealing with the chaos that is. And all that stuff.
Especially this semester. It's different because everybody is online. When you go into class, because I'm here in Huntsville, I actually go to class. It's different. It's different because it's like three students when I'm like used to having like 15, 25, 30 students in a classroom. Now it's like down to like three or four of us having to wear a mask all the time. You know, it's the new norm, you know, it's the new normal. Mm-hmm. So we're still adjusting to it. It's different.
And I think that's the reality in all, not only SDA institutions, but all institutions right now.
Also, including, I feel like we'll go back to church. That's what we're going to have to do, to put on the mask. It's like mask. So,
So feel free to find some SDA ones like myself. I have a Pathfinder youth one that I like to enjoy to wear. So
okay.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So with that, we talked about you being running for Miss Oakwood, talked about Oakwood, but you know my passion is talking about my people, my Haitian community, young people in the Haitian church. So give me your two cents about you know, how we engage with our young people in the Haitian church. I know you might want to be delicate, but feel free. Speak your mind. Vent if you have to vent, but just give us your thoughts.
You want the good or the bad? I'm just kidding.
Give me the truth. That's all I want.
I'll give you the truth, and that's all I can do. Okay, so for one, I'm not known to just cry in front of a congregation. Like, I'm not one to do that. So I've never did. Even if the worship, the praise would touch me, it's like you want to cry, but it's just, let me hold it back. So then now I'm stopping myself from praising. Now I'm stopping myself from worshiping because I'm not used to seeing people, you know, cry in the presence of God. I'm not used to that because when you do that, you look like a moon fool. You look like a crazy person. So, you know, I always try to step back and not, if I feel like crying, I would literally just stop singing and then I would stay in my place. When I got to Oakwood, the first AY that they had, I was in tears. Second AY, fifth AY, I was in tears. Then I realized it's okay to cry. It's okay to open up and be vulnerable. But, you know, and growing up Haitian, we're not used to vulnerability. We're not used to opening up and showing our emotions. We're not used to that. Maybe some are, but as for me, I wasn't raised like that. And from what I've seen, a lot of people was not really open or vulnerable about themselves or how they're feeling. That's for one. So if we can have more, you know, openness and vulnerability within the Haitian culture, I feel like that would be one of the biggest change. Another thing, I love my people. Listen, I rep hard for my Haitian culture, okay? I love them. I love the food. I love everything about it. The culture, the fashion, everything. I love it. But growing up Haitian, listen, like, I didn't really have strict parents. So I was able to, be myself within, you know, be myself, but to a certain extent. be myself to a certain extent, because it's just like Dipufessa. Oh, that's what it is. I feel like us Haitians, we care too much about Dipufessa. Like if you do this, this person gonna view you that way. They care about what people think. They care about people's opinions, and it's just like, huh? No, that's not how you're supposed to live life. You're not supposed to live life thinking, oh, what Telentel is going to think, or what Fuelentel or this person is going to think about you, because then you're limiting your life. You're limiting yourself in this narrow little way when you can become big and move in different ways. That's another one. Let me see. Another point is, our peoples, the Gumons, they believe that they were saints growing up. They believe that at this time, you can't be out there doing whatever you want to do. But you can't tell me I can't do that and not give me a reason behind it. Did you experience it? Me, I'm based on experience. I'm based on, well, if you went through it, explain to me what you went through. That way I can have a better understanding. But if you tell a child, you have a phone right here, you tell a child, don't touch the phone. But you're not telling the child the reasoning on why they can't touch this phone. So you know what the child going to do? They're going to touch the phone. Because you didn't give them a reason why they cannot touch the phone. 26, I'm 26. I mean, curfew, okay. But I believe I was like 20 or 21 when I could come home past 11 o'clock. I think around that time. But my little brother, my brothers, ooh, they could come home at 6 o'clock in the morning. There's no problem. So the double standards that when it comes with the female and the males, like, can we all have the same rules? You know, it's just so much. But you know, you have to love our people. You have to love our people, because at the end of the day, their intuition is A1. It's as if they know what's going to happen. Don't go out there. This is what's gonna happen to you if you go out there. You come home and you're like, you were right. You were right. But you can't tell your parents you were right. I said, Ndusa, what? You know, you don't want that. You don't want to give them that type of credit, because it's just going to keep proving their point. But, you know, I love my Haitian people. I really love them. You know, where it says unity and strength, we are always together. It don't matter. Like, I'll be at Oakland and I'll come across a Haitian and it's like we click. Just like that. You know what I mean? Compared to if I was to, you know, see like someone else, it's just like, oh, okay, hello, how are you? You see a Haitian, it's just like, you Haitian? Oh, where are you from? Where are your parents from? Where are your family from? And I just love that. I love that sense of like, whew, like you're my sister, like you're my brother, you know? So I love it. I love the Haitian culture. It's just the little things that, you know, they need to.
We can bond over how we were raised. And how the food and all these things, and we can watch the new trending social media that makes fun of our culture too. And we enjoy that. But what I got from you is basically, man, what I'm getting so, and this is the thing, no matter where I get a young Haitian leader, it could be from Northeastern Conference, Southern New England Conference, Allegheny East, Allegheny West, Southeastern Conference, Florida Conference, you guys practically all say the same thing. And it is, listen to our young people, have transparency with them, honest conversations, such as we don't discount your advice, but tell us why you're giving us the advice. Don't just and what I've been harping on these past couple episodes is, I think we need to change how we exhibit our methods, because our intentions are good, but our methods is not what it should be, because what our methods end up doing is exhibiting conditional love when we are loving our young people unconditionally. So we need to show unconditional love, because a lot of young people, especially Haitian young people, come to me and tell me, man, I messed up and I thought that my parents were not going to love me.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, that's what they were trained. They were trained that, you know, we mess up, we're not going to get the love.
Yeah. But
that also leads to another issue that I've been talking about too, which is when we succeed and we still don't get the love, we get the degree and then they still say, okay, when are you getting married? And then you go, fine. Then you get married. And then they say, okay, where's the first kid? And then you say, okay, fine. Then you have the kid and you're raising them well. And then they say, you know, they need a sibling. And then you're like,
yeah.
When does it end? So I think if we did that, I think we would empower our young people and they could really embrace our culture, not run away for freedom, yeah, and things like that, and have the mentality that you have, which is, even if it is l'église, l'école, l'école, we can maximize our opportunities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get it. That, it just brings me, you remind me of one more thing about, you know, our lovely, you know, culture. It's the degrees. If you're not an engineer, if you're not a nurse, if you're not a doctor, if you're not a lawyer, you know, it's like, oh, but what you doing? Does it make money? Does it this? Does it that? And it's just like, can you just support me? Just support me. All I need is your support. And I feel like when you give your child that support, I promise you, they're going to go hard for what they're going for. But when you're forcing them to become like this doctor or to become like this lawyer or to become like this other person that they in their heart don't feel like they want to, it's as if you're holding their happiness, you're holding their end goal, you're holding it back. When I told my parents I was, because originally I wanted to become a pharmacist. So when I told my dad I'm going in for social work, he's like, the first thing he asked me was just like, kombe kob wap touche, if you were to, you know, compare pharmacy and social work, would you make money? And it's just like, yeah, daddy, no, that's what we're not going to do. And as honest as I am, I told my dad, if I don't have your support, then I'm just going to have to do this on my own, you know? Wow. And once I said that to him, it's like, okay, you know what? Let me get a better understanding what social work is. So now when I go home, it's like, so what did you learn throughout, you know, your semester? Share with me, teach me what you learned so that I can have a better understanding of what social work is or what you plan to do as your end goal. And when you receive that type of support from your parents, your Haitian parents on top of that, it's very big, because it makes you want to like go hard and do what you have to do to make sure like you become the person that you told yourself that you're going to become. So if they were very like more supportive in our career, our major, I feel like we would succeed in the long run.
And
go ahead.
In the fact that when God gives you a goal and gives you a purpose, you will be more effective in doing what God asks you to do than chasing after money and being in this approved job. So if I chase, as the world said, to be a doctor or a nurse, which I'll be honest, I did.
Okay.
And they said, oh man, you're good at this. But if I continued that, I would just be focused on making the money. I wouldn't be focused on making a difference, because I wasn't called to be a nurse or a doctor. So I am making more of a difference. And that goes for anybody who is given a God-given calling. You will make more of a difference doing what God has called you to do, even though it seems out of the box, out of the ordinary. It doesn't have the accolades of an engineer, doctor, lawyer, but if you do what God asks you to do, you will change the world. And I mean, Jesus had a carpenter degree that and he changed the world. So it's about following God's plan for you. So get educated, but man, what when God tells you to be a pastor, because if that's the same question I got when I said I'm going to be a pastor. I said, my mom said, in America, you're not going to make money. And then what am I supposed to do? So I'm going to go be a nurse and be miserable? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to do what chase God, mm-hmm. God told me to do, and I'll be happier living on that check than rich? So I just had to let that out too, because that's on my chest as well. So, man, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this stuff. This was awesome. And once again, they can find you on Instagram and Facebook at your name, Pure_Thannis. All right.
Or Thannis, yeah.
So everybody, if you enjoyed this conversation, feel free to follow her and what she is doing. I mean, she's doing amazing things. That's why I had to have her on the podcast. So once again, as I close this episode out, I give it to the guest to have some words of encouragement. So right now there is a young lady, a Haitian young lady in the Southeastern Conference, who is getting told by her parents, you need to be a lawyer or a doctor. Don't come at me with this social work or English major or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But or pastor. I mean, that's another big one. Women pastor? No, not the Haitian community. There is one young Haitian lady in Southeastern mm-hmm. Conference going through that right now. What words of encouragement would you have for her?
So she wants to become a lawyer?
No, I mean, God has called her to be something completely different from the accepted careers that Haitians would say, yeah, that's good. You know, something completely different.
Okay, so I do have a verse that I would actually want to start off with. Romans 8, verse 26 through 28. And it says, in the same way the Spirit help us in our weakness, we do not know what he ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us through wordless groans. And he who searches our heart knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance with the will of God. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and have according to his purpose. So I believe if she believed that this is what God called her to be, to become whether a lawyer, to become wherever it may be, even a pastor, do not be discouraged. Know that the Holy Spirit is interceding on your behalf. Although you may not have no words to say what you want to say in your prayers, things that you would want to say or express to your family or whomever, continue to do what God called you to do. And I promise you, he will open doors that you never saw was there for you. If you decide that you're going to stop doing and you want to please those that want you to become someone that you're not, then you're setting yourself short to become nothing in life, because then you're going to live a life where you're just living for people and not for yourself and God's purpose for yourself. So that's the advice I would give her. It don't matter who it is. When I sat my dad down, I was telling him, hey, if I do not have your support, I'ma still do what I have to do. And eventually he came around and started supporting me. So if you have to sit someone down to tell them, hey, this is what I feel like I'm supposed to be doing, this is what I feel like God called me to be, do what you have to do, but don't live for others. Don't do it. Because the Holy Spirit is interceding on your behalf. And if God is calling you to be who he wants you to be, I promise you, no one should get in the way of that. Nobody.